Hi, everybody. This is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicles Stories of the Supernatural. And today I am following up on a very interesting case about a demonic house in Gary, Indiana. And this house, back in January of 2016, it was allegedly infested with demons and was torn down. Now, Zach Bagans, the host of Ghost Adventures, had bought the house in 2014, and during 2015, he filmed a documentary in the home about the events that had transpired there. Now, he claimed that there was something powerful, dark, and intelligent haunting the small structure. Now, the release of the documentary has been delayed, and as of this date, there is no further information about it. Now, there was an article that appeared in the National Catholic Register which quoted Father Michael Maginot, who's the pastor of the local church, and he's the priest who freed the family through a series of exorcisms in 2013, and he believes that there's a supernatural agent interfering and causing the delays. Now, Father Maginot, when Zach Bagans decided to go ahead and film the documentary, he went ahead, and Father Maginot was an advisor during the production, but he only signed on when, in other words, he got in writing that it had to be truthful. In other words, he put it in writing that the promise to be truthful had to be part of his, you know, agreement to participate as an advisor. And another thing also, that at the beginning of the production, it seems that him and Zach Bagans didn't see eye to eye, and he even puts that effect to the roots being the darkness that was pervading that house. Okay, now the Father Maginot, you know, he went ahead and he did exorcisms on the family, and they moved away. Between the time that it was torn down, the documentary, it stood empty. And according to another priest, which is Father Vincent Lampert, he's the pastor of St. Malachi Church and the exorcist for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis. Okay, he, as a matter of fact, he consulted with Father Maginot during the exorcism at the home. What he said was that people were being fascinated by the evil, and that they were going to this house and doing seances, and that any continuation of evil could have been caused by people bringing it on by their actions. And he also explains that houses can be blessed to drive out evil spirits, and spirits don't live in a location like people do. Okay, and I think he was trying to differentiate that you can't exorcise a building or a structure. The exorcism can only be conducted on human beings. And at the end, he basically is warning that the attention given to the house afterwards, and if in truth people were going in there and doing seances, might have opened up a portal or anything that maybe might have been shut down by blessings or whatever the clergy did while the family was still living there. Now I'm going to let you go ahead and see some clips of the initial news when it broke in the hometown, and then some other when it just became a nationwide news story, and then later on some individual interviews with Father Maginot. And at the end, I want you to ask yourself, where did these demons go? And if you go to my website, which I'm going to put a link there in the credits, you can actually see the reports issued by the child protective investigator who went out to see the family. And part of it is redacted because, of course, they don't allow the children's names to be given out. But you could see that a lot of the report that person wrote up and their experience coincided with the claims of what the family was saying was going on. You know, and of course, along the way, there was even medical personnel, police, and other people who came in contact with the family in the house who described very unusual experiences and seeing things. And again, at the end, what happened with his family? A lot of other people who have found themselves in similar circumstances to Mrs. Ammons and her children, where they've either been possessed, because it wasn't only the children, it was also the mom. They say that even once you are cleansed through an exorcism and you're freed, you are still earmarked by evil as in other words, they know that they were able to get you once before, so they still keep track of you. Okay, what happens to this family? What happens to this location? The place was bulldozed, but what happens if somebody else builds anything else? I even wonder what's going on with those neighbors. Good question, huh? And of course, those kids, do they remember anything? What happens with them? So again, question is this an evil location? What happens to the family? Are we ever going to hear from them again? I did hear at one point that a couple years ago, this story was being looked at as possibly being made into a movie in Hollywood, but I haven't heard anything further from it, and I don't know if it was shelved. I am looking forward to seeing the documentary from Zach Bagans, and time will tell what happens with his family, and maybe we will get an answer as to where did the demons go.
I noticed there was like horse flies on the inside porch, and this was, you know, the beginning of winter, so that was very odd to me. We would lock the basement door, and you would hear something hit the door, boom, and you would hear dogs barking. No dogs outside, no dogs. We would go look, no dogs.
One time she woke up in the middle of the night, maybe like 3 a.m, and they saw this shadowy figure pacing back and forth in the living room.
And I saw one like coming into full image. It was coming out of my closet. I've never seen it like that before. I would see the shadows, you know, but I've never seen it like how I'm looking at you and you're looking at me.
You can see it stretching his stomach. And my grandson was crying, Mama, Grandma, help. And then we go to his leg, and his leg was bulging. I'm like, oh my God, Tweety, look. It was bulging out of his arm. And then we pray over him, and we know him.
Latoya took me inside the house and showed me different stuff. I didn't see anything that was relevant to what she said, even though other people did. So I was very skeptical. I just figured she owed me money and this is a fabricated story. And that's not strange to my walk of life. That does happen, you know. Like I said, I thought I heard it all. This is a new one to me.
And I told my daughter, I said, they're going to make it look like we are hurting these children. So we're going to have to get some help some kind of place, some kind of way. We got to convince somebody that this is actually going on.
This boy was in one of the emergency room areas. He was kind of growling, you know, and his grandmother was holding his hands and trying to coax him back. And all of a sudden he started, you know, she was kind of backing him up and toward the wall. And then he started to walk up the wall backwards, did a flip over her head. And there was the psychologist and the social service worker in that room that saw that, and they ran out and got the security, and the security called the chaplain, and you know, he called me, and they got the police involved and all that.
Until he saw what the other one did when he went up that wall, then he like, oh my God, this is impossible. Nobody can do this. Nobody.
There's 5 people that saw this happen, and they're, you know, different walks of life. That does change things a little bit. I have a hard to believe that all 5 of those people will say this just to be saying it.
We'll have to do an exorcism. It was pretty much without incident until we get to the part of your name and you ask for its name. Now, so far she's always been silent. So, and I says, is your name whatever? And then all of a sudden she started convulsing and such. So now once you have a name, you kind of attack it. You try everything, you know, you kind of go through the whole rite to see which things push the buttons of, you know, the entity. And once you found what does it, you keep on using it over and over. Whenever you would praise God in Latin, no reaction. But you start condemning the demon, you know, condemning, you know, the evil spirit, you know, all of a sudden she's reacting to that. And then you will go back, and the moment you go back to praising God, she would stop reacting. So I went through the whole rite, and then finally went the second time, you know, and then it was just like just focusing on the condemnations part. And that was kind of riling up. I think I even went a third time. But you could tell it was kind of weakening, and then eventually she fell asleep again.
Demons can actually possess you, use you, so you can give them souls, you know. And they make you take your own life, you know. So, I mean, it's real. And a lot of people don't think about it. They live their lives day to day, and you never think that.
Joining us now, the reporter with the Indianapolis Star who wrote the initial story and conducted more than a dozen interviews on it. Marissa Kwiatkowski is with me now. Marissa, good to see you. Let me start with this. After all the interviews you did of independent third-party witnesses and so on, do you believe the story?
It's not my job to believe or disbelieve the story. I will leave that to others.
It's not your job, but what do you think? I'm asking you. I mean, were you persuaded at all?
It's not my job to be persuaded either way. My job is to report the facts as they were told to me and to let people draw their own conclusions, and I wrote it that way deliberately.
Well, let me ask you this. You've got a police captain saying he believes. Did you interview the people who claim to have seen the boy walking backwards up the wall?
I interviewed the registered nurse who witnessed or says he witnessed the boy walking backward up the wall. I did not interview the Department of Child Services caseworker. However, I had her report from that incident.
And did she claim to see it as well?
She claimed to see it as well, yes.
Do you have any reason to doubt their accounts? I mean, as a reporter, you always go in skeptical.
I think they believe it, yes.
Is there any reason that you uncovered to doubt them? In other words, any history of their relationship with the truth, any performance complaints, that kind of thing?
Good question. No, there weren't any sorts of situations that gave me pause. People in credible positions doing typical work and, you know, nothing to report.
How many eyewitnesses were there to the you know, so-called possessed behavior other than the mother? Because, you know, the mother may or may not have had issues. There was a psychologist saying she's got some issues and the kids are basically performing for her. How many people outside of the family who are verifying these accounts?
You mean in the hospital or outside of the hospital?
Anybody outside of the family.
It would take me a bit of time to count, but at least 5 or 6 people who say they witnessed things that were strange.
Is there any audio or visual?
There are not audio or visual representations of the boy walking up the wall or the levitation. There are photos of things that police saw while they were in the home, but nothing, you know, no demons or paranormal or anything like that.
All right, we'll continue to follow it. Thanks for bringing it to our attention, Marissa. All the best.
All right, let's move on. I mean, here you are, a priest, and you get a call, apparently, from, is it the Ammons family? Is that correct?
Ammons.
Ammons, okay. Ammons family. That's a long A. Okay. Ammons family, and they wanted your help. And why did they want your help? What was going on?
Yeah, I kind of got involved in all this by accident. I cover for the Catholic priest chaplain who works in the 2 Methodist hospitals in our area, one in Gary, one in Merrillville, next door. And his days off are Friday and Saturday. And so I usually get called in for emergencies.
Right.
And so on the Friday, April 2012, I was doing what I normally do on Friday morning as my Bible study class. Mm-hmm. And I got the call from the Methodist Hospital in Gary from the chaplain who asked me to come over to do an exorcism. And I said, why's that? And he mentioned that this 9-year-old boy was seen by several professional staff people walking up the wall backwards and flipping over his grandmother, and they ran out of the room, and they got the security to look in that. The security then called the police. They called the chaplain.
Would you mind rolling over that again? You said that he was walking up a wall backward?
Backwards, yeah. So the way it happened, it was the Child Protective Services were noticing that the three children, were missing school a lot, and sometimes when they were at school, they would have things like bloody noses, bloody gums, and different things. And so there was a lot of suspicion that something wasn't right at home.
Right.
And so they kind of got involved and asked, and it was the mother and grandmother were kind of watching over the children.
Sure.
And so they took them to their doctor to have them examine the children.
Yes.
And to see what's wrong.
Family doctor, and right?
The family doctor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so in that doctor's office, it first of all started with what would happen is this demon would jump from one child to the other. And so
wow.
It would affect one child. And then Duke's crazy things, and then jump to the next one, and continue probably to do about similar type of things.
Walking up a wall backwards—that's movie stuff. I mean, do you have other people who saw this happen? Witnesses?
Yeah, there's a couple of professional witnesses. That one was the child protective agent. And the other one was a psychological nurse, and I think a psychiatric doctor also
wow.
saw the same thing. So they were, that was at the hospital in the emergency room, which they took the children to after the doctor's office. Because in the doctor's office, one boy was picked up and thrown into the wall.
What?
And before that, they were kind of growling and saying everyone must die, you know, very growly
God.
Voice. And
Father, hold on.
Their eyes are rolling.
Right. Oh, no. I'm getting this, Father. Just stop for a second. It's a 9-year-old boy we're talking about right now. How many children totally?
There's three children.
Three?
The two boys are alive. They were right in the time of their birthdays. So it was like one was like 7 turning to 8. The other one was 9 turning to 10,
right.
And then one was the girl, was the oldest, was 11 turning to 12. Their birthdays were right around that time.
7, 9, and 11, okay. And you're saying that this demon jumped between all of these children back and forth?
Yeah, it would kind of jump from one to the other when it was active. And it also, we originally found it stemmed from the mother, but no one kind of knew it at that time. But and so when when one boy got thrown against the wall, he would kind of fall asleep, and they couldn't wake him up.
Father, do you mean up into the air and up against the wall like that?
Yeah, they saw him like be picked up, thrown to the wall, and knocked down, and then he kind of fell, you know. Then he would be like unconscious.
Right.
And then the second boy was also kind of acting strange. Now he was kind of saying things, you know, everyone must die, and growling, and such, and then he kind of like fell asleep, you know, went unconscious. But they couldn't wake them up, either the boys. And so, and also the doctor, when he was seeing all this, he said, I don't have no idea what all this is. This is beyond my capacity.
I've got
to call the ambulance. So
yeah.
So they got two ambulances to take the two boys to the emergency room at the hospital. And
7-year-old and the 9-year-old.
So they went for, and it didn't seem to, I think the girl was there, but she didn't seem to be affected at that time. It seemed like they brought, the first thing happened to one boy, the next thing happened to the other boy, and then And then that's when they called the emergency, the ambulance.
Well, sure, yeah. I can imagine, only imagine, a family doctor in his office seeing all this go on. It would be hands up, hands off, take them away.
Yeah. And I think the girl went with the mother and grandmother, you know, and they followed the ambulance. The child protective servant agent also went over there. Now, when they got to the emergency room, it's the youngest boy, it was going berserk. And so it took like five guys to hold him down. They tried to restrain him and all that. And I think they ended up finally sedating him, you know, and they kept him overnight for observation.
Sure.
And so it would be the next morning, the family would come back, the grandmother, mother, and also the girl would also come back. And in the morning, again, the one boy was kind of always talking about this boy, his friend. Now, he would see this boy in the closet at their home that would talk to him about what it's like to die, what it's like to be killed. And so, and then all of a sudden he'll start growling, and then again, you know, go uncontrollable, and then it'd take again like five guys to try to hold him down, and then they'll try to strap him into the bed, and you know, into the gurney and all that, and you know, and sedate him. Then it kind of jumped to the other boy in the other observation room.
The 9-year-old.
So the 7-year-old was with the mother, and then it jumped into the other boy in the other room. This is the 9-year-old, and he was with his grandmother, and now he started acting strange. Now this is so that you had staff in these two rooms. Okay.
Sure.
So. And all of a sudden, when the 9-year-old started acting strange, he would start growling. He would start like hitting his grandmother headbutting her in her stomach, and says, "It's now time to die," you know. And then she would try to coax him back, calling his name, and she was holding on to his hands. And as she was trying to coax him back, calling his name, she was backing him up against the wall. And as he came up to the wall, he started to walk, like, there's two ways that it's described, that he walked up the wall. Some say he kind of like skated up the wall, glided up the wall, just kind of lifted up the wall. So that there was kind of a couple different descriptions of that. Then some say he walked on the ceiling, but he kind of flipped over his grandmother. So it was more of, he flipped over his grandmother, sat in the chair, and then looked at everyone who was kind of in that room, and gave this like Grinch-like grin, you know, to them. And his eyes were white, you know. So, and they ran, and everyone who was in that room ran out.
I would have done. This is really scary stuff. And you're saying there's plenty of witnesses to all of this.
Yeah.
I've got somebody who said yes. It was on Fox News. It's been all over the place. So this is that case. My goodness. Continue, Father. I don't know what to say.
So when I heard that story, I said, okay, there is something there, but I explained to them, yeah, I can't do anything now. I have to get permission from the bishop to do this, and I need to do an investigation, but I am willing to meet with everyone. And so I feel free to give them my contact information, and I'll meet with them as soon as possible.
Right.
And so what ended up happening is the three children were taken away from the parents, away from the mother and grandmother. So two of them were, the two older ones were put in to with the Carmelite sisters in the area that take care of foster children.
Right.
But the 7-year-old who, you know, it took like five guys to hold down, and
yes,
and who was talking about, you know, what it's like to die and such, and seeing seeing the boy in the closet at his home and such, he was taken to a children's psychiatric lockdown unit in another psychiatric hospital in another part of our area here.
So at this point, even after all of this and all of these witnesses, you're still not involved in the sense of doing an exorcism. I mean, you would think that when any medical person saw any of what you just mm-hmm. described, mm-hmm. they would, you know, that's not in any of the books I read when I was becoming a nurse or a doctor. No way.
Yeah.
So I guess that's when were you then involved?
So I then contacted the mother and grandmother contacted me. They mentioned their children were taken away, and I said, okay, I can meet with you at the home, at your home on Sunday evening after my last Mass. I have a 5 o'clock Mass. I'm done at 6, so I could get there about 6:30. So I went to their home at 6:30 and was there for about 4 hours to do an investigation.
Right.
And the first 2 hours were pretty much them telling the whole story. And it all kind of started when they moved into the house. And the reason she moved into the house was that she was trying to get away from her ex-boyfriend, whom she found out was a married man, when her his wife called her. I guess she discovered her phone number on his phone.
Found her.
And says, "What are you doing with my husband?" And she says, "Oh, I didn't know he's a married. Don't worry, this relationship is over." And it kind of explained a lot of things. But she did say something that was kind of strange. And she said, "You will regret ever messing with my husband." And she said, "Well, don't worry, this is over, you know." But he wouldn't let it go. And so he kept on kind of stalking her almost. And so she felt the best way was to move away and not let him know where they're going. So her brother's landlord said that there was a house available, very cheap. And so and they went to see it, and so they decided to move in there. And but I guess the boyfriend eventually found out where she moved to. Probably he followed her from work or something like that, and eventually found where she was living at, and then started to show up again. But when they moved into the house, it seemed to be things. First of all, they saw all kinds of horseflies. This is about November, so it's kind of late in the season for that. But so especially on the porch, and they were usually these a lot of dead horseflies, and so they would sweep them up, and the next day they'll find a whole mess of more, and they kept on sweeping up the horseflies.
Wow.
Then one time she saw someone walking back and forth, pacing in their living room. I think this was the grandmother, and she thought someone broke into their house. So when she jumped out of bed and turned on the light, no one was there. But when they looked on the ground, on the floor, there was muddy footprints.
Wow.
And they seemed to come up from the basement area. And then later on, they would hear footsteps coming up the basement. And so the way they kind of dealt with that was to put a lock on the the door from the kitchen to the basement. And then all of a sudden they would hear footsteps coming up the steps and then pounding on the door.
Oh, good Lord.
And when they would go and open it, they would see no one. And then other times they would hear dogs barking out there, and then they would open up that door but not see anything.
Father, especially with regard to somebody coming up the steps to the locked door from the basement and pounding on the door, and then nobody being there. No offense, but how does anybody stay in a house with that kind of action going on? I just, you know, you see it in movies, and you're sitting here screaming, get the heck out of that house. And, of course, they never do, and I guess they had a good deal on this house, so and they didn't have a lot of money, so no choice.
Yeah, they were kind of trapped, so that's usually the one thing that keeps people from moving out. They have, you know, they sign a lease and things, and so they would be liable to pay the whole thing, and so they really didn't have anywhere else to go, and so it was kind of livable in the early part. It seemed to escalate through the winter time to, as I mentioned, the kids were starting to wake up with blood on their pillows and bloody noses, bloody gums, bloody lips, and things like that. But they couldn't see, you know, the blood would just kind of appear out of nowhere and, you know, then kind of go away.
Was it at that point, when you interviewed Mom and Grandma, at that point, were they noticing that this was moving from child to child?
Yeah, it was. They didn't see it like be jumping, but it would like affect one child one day, then another one, another day, and another one, another day,
right.
And such. So it was never, but never was it two at the same time. So they didn't kind of see that later. They would see something happening to the one child, but it would affect all three. And it wouldn't be till they kind of saw later that, you know, never was two things happening to two of them at the same time.
I see. All right. You had a pretty good, long, substantial interview with Mom and Grandma. I guess Mom was Latoya Ammons, is that correct?
Yes, Latoya, yes.
Latoya, okay. What did you come away with from that interview? What did you make of her?
Yeah, actually, because I was always trying to figure out, when you're doing this, you're trying to figure out what's the source of this, what brought this in.
Right.
And now we're trying to do this without the kids there, you know, because they're there. So,
of course, yes.
And she didn't know quite, you know, so I'm asking, what do you think, you know, did they get involved in, you know, kind of, did they play a game, you know, Ouija board, video game, you know.
Right.
We're trying to, and they pretty much, we couldn't come up with anything like that. Latoya then was mentioning that she also started to have kidney ailments and went to the doctor three times, like in January, with three different kidney ailments. Mm-hmm. And then one time, the only time the grandmother seemed to be affected was one time she was washing clothes in the basement, and all of a sudden something choked her, and she had to get out of the basement. But that was the only time she was ever attacked. But she did mention one time she saw all kinds of sand in the basement strewn over the floor, and so she had to sweep it up, and it was like two buckets worth of sand that she had to sweep up from the basement and throw it outside. And then everything seemed to escalate with the last time the boyfriend came over to the house. Now, they would never let, she didn't want anything to do with the boyfriend. Would always tell her, go back to your wife. We're, you know, this is over with and such. And he would keep on showing up, and, you know, and they would try to keep, you know, just tell him, you know, to go. But the last time he came to the house, he wanted to give the boys $5 each. But he didn't give anything to the girl, and I kind of found that strange, and I asked, why was that? I think Latoya was at work when that happened, and Rosa, the grandmother, was calling her and says, he's here, and says, get rid of him, and he says, he wants to give the boys something. What does he want to give them? $5 each. And he says, okay, that's okay. But I asked, why did he give something to the boys and nothing to the girl? And Rosa said that he said that that the boys needed this incentive to be good, but the girl didn't. But it just struck me. There's something bizarre and all that. And so 3 days later is when kind of everything escalated in the house. And it was a family gathering. Their whole family was at the house. And all of a sudden, the girl gets, they're all sitting in the living room and such, and the girl gets pulled off the couch, and she's landed on the floor. And everyone looks at her and says, "What are you doing?" She says, "Someone pulled me off the couch." And then she started, "Oh, my stomach's hurting," and such. She was feeling sick, and then they would kind of take her to her room, and they were kind of trying to take care of her, and she's feeling nauseous. They would see her stomach kind of bulging, you know, and such, and
really?
And her legs kind of bulging and all that. And then Rosa went to the kitchen to get a washcloth so she could put on her head. And all of a sudden, behind her, in their living room, they had a freezer, and because there wasn't room in the kitchen. And all of a sudden, one of the boys got thrown into the freezer. And she turned around, and everyone heard this big boom, and, you know, and said, "What happened to you?" And said, "Someone threw me into the freezer." And then he started to get sick.
Now, wait a minute. This is, Father, this is a freezer that is closed, right?
This is like a, you know, like a refrigerator freezer. So it's a, but it's in the living room because they didn't have room in their kitchen for it.
So it opened and he went flying.
It's a closed freezer, but
okay.
He got thrown like at the doctor's office. He got
thrown up against
thrown up against it, and everyone just heard the boom and turned around and saw him. You know, they thought he ran into it. He said, "No, someone threw me into the freezer," and he says, "There's no one else around here." You know, so then he started getting sick. And so they then took him into the bedroom, and the same things were happening to him. He was feeling nauseous. His stomach was, you know, bumps were appearing, and his legs, bumps were, and bulges and things were appearing.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the third boy was in the bathroom, and he got thrown out of the bathroom and went, you know, flying. And everyone turns around and says, what happened to you? And he says, "Someone threw me out of the bathroom." And then all of a sudden he got sick, you know, the same way.
Right.
And with that, then everyone's leaving. You know, I said, we're getting out of here. This is bizarre.
Right.
And so they kind of heard some of the stories before of what was happening. But this is the first time the family actually witnessed what was going on. And so all the family leaves except for a cousin, and she asked her parents if she could stay overnight with the girl, and they said that was okay. And so everyone left, and so they're kind of getting ready for bed. Everything seemed to settle down, and they turn off the lights in the bedroom and such. And Rosa and I and LaToya were about ready to get into bed and such, and they heard this scream, and they come running into the bedroom and open the door and turn on the light, and they see their daughter fall onto the bed. And the cousin said that she screamed because the girl was 2 feet off the bed, levitated.
Okay.
And the girl didn't know. She woke up, you know, after she fell on the bed, and she didn't know anything, you know, what happened. And so they now kind of saw, well, we better do something. They were Baptist, but their church wouldn't help them out with the other things earlier. But Rosa's mother, who was kind of a shut-in in an apartment, had a neighbor who belonged to this deliverance church. They do deliverance services.
Yes.
And so Rosa tried to call her mother and to have them come over to see if they could do anything for the. But it took All kinds of different things were happening, interfering with their phone calls, you know. So she would call them. One would call the other, and one would hear them, but wouldn't hear the other. And then the other one would call back, and you could hear the one, but not the other.
Electronic interference.
So it's like electronic interference. Then all of a sudden, they would call again, and there was this, you know, staticky, but it sounded like a voice in the static, you know, growling and things. And then in one of the calls back, they said that there was a whole series of zeros on their phone as the number. But eventually they finally got enough that they would send, she would talk to her neighbor, and the neighbor would have the church send people over that Tuesday. And so...
All right, Father, hold it there. It's a natural break point, I guess, or maybe not natural. How do you break this story at all? So you're hearing a story of possession, and you're going to hear a story of exorcism. This was a nationwide, worldwide story. I'm Art Bell.